After crossing the Potomac, Lee moved slowly back into Virginia, arriving at Culpeper Courthouse, where he started his northern march 6 weeks earlier by July 24th. Meade, who had the confidence of Lincoln restored by then, followed Lee south slowly, too slowly, Sharp thought. Just crossing the Potomac beginning July 17th took its toll on many of Meade's men in the oppressive summer heat. "We must stop soon, as horses and mules are dropping dead every day, and the men are nearly exhausted," Sharp wrote his uncle Jansen. Through the rest of the summer, fall, and winter, the two commanders maneuvered and fought minor engagements against each other, Lee keeping his force south of the Rapidan, while Meade's army stayed north of the river, but they accomplished little. Neither army was in much shape for a major battle until it rebuilt. Sharp had spies on the move throughout the rest of the year and considered himself the best-informed officer in Meade's army on Lee's movements, although Meade continued to carp in letters to Halleck that he had no reliable intelligence. Citizen agents from Sharp's old Virginia network, like Isaac Silver, fed him intelligence from Orange County, where Lee had his operating base. Richmond refugees reported to him on the movement of Confederate units through the Capitol. An observant runaway slave who had waited on Stuart's staff had details on the cavalry general's headquarters at one point at William Bradford's house near Culpeper Courthouse. For what he called an intelligence diary, Sharp collected a stack of valuable Richmond newspapers, whose stories Confederate authorities obviously had not censored, which contained the transcript of Lee's after-action report for the Maryland and Pennsylvania campaign, unit dispatches on different engagements, and strength summaries for the Army of Northern Virginia as of August 11th. Not all Sharp's agents delivered accurate intelligence. Michael Graham, the former spy for General Milroy in Winchester, who now fed Sharp information and believed a vast Jewish conspiracy plotted against the Union, reported in October that Lee had rebuilt his force into the largest and finest army he has ever had, and would soon invade Maryland to capture Baltimore and Washington. Sharp suspected Graham had been duped by Southern agents and grilled him on his sources. Sharp also occasionally interrogated rebel deserters with similar disinformation that Lee's army had been fortified to 100,000. He and Babcock knew from their interviews with hundreds of other bedraggled prisoners and deserters that Lee's army by early November still numbered about 52,000 largely dispirited souls, and if anything, was moving farther south, living from hand to mouth, because of supply shortages, as he wrote in a September memo. Sharp could plainly see from the rebels crossing into Union lines that Lee was plagued by desertions. From Richmonders he interviewed, it was also clear that friction had grown between their star general and their Confederate cabinet over the failed Pennsylvania campaign.